Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is side two of For the Record program number 536, titled Liechtenstein, Oh Liechtenstein. This is being recorded on November 27th of the year 2005. In this side of the broadcast, we're going to continue to look at the tiny country of Liechtenstein in Europe. With a population of just 32,000, about the same as Ohio State, that is to say Ohio State University, it's a tiny little country, but because of its connections, it is extremely important indeed. And the most important aspect of Liechtenstein is the fact that it's basically an offshore center. We've talked about offshore and the significance of these tax havens in the global economy. In, among other broadcasts, are many conversations with Lucy Commissar, most recently For the Record 531. Because of their position not only in the world commercial economy, where these offshore centers become major focal points for clandestine corporate maneuvering, but also because of the fact that intelligence agencies, criminal syndicates, terrorist organizations also utilize these same funny money centers such as Liechtenstein, they assume a very, very important position in world affairs. Now, again, Liechtenstein is a country most people have never heard of. It has only 32,000 people. But because money laundering is us, so to speak, the Liechtensteiners could say, and because of the fact that its royal family, as we have seen and are going to see, is very well connected indeed, Liechtenstein is a place that is worth studying. In the many connections of Liechtenstein to some of the things we've been speaking about run in the direction of what I call the Underground Reich, elements associated with the financing of Al-Qaeda and other Islamist groups. And so that's one of the reasons why we're taking a look at Liechtenstein, oh Liechtenstein, in this broadcast. Now, after taking a look at elements of overlap between the Karl Duisberg milieu, the Karl Duisberg Gesellschaft milieu, I should say, and the Alpha conglomerate, and in turn taking a look at some of the people who were involved with Alpha, such as Norbert Seeger, and their links to the Liechtenstein money laundering establishment of the royal family, after taking a look at that, we took a look at the royal family of Liechtenstein's links to the House of Habsburg, and in turn, the House of Habsburg's links to elements of international fascism. Old Otto von Habsburg had some rather reactionary and, one might say, overtly Nazi political sympathies, not only being the secretary of a far-right party, but also belonging to the Free Rudolf Hess Committee as well. His son, Karl von Habsburg, as we saw in Side 1, was basically married into the Thyssen-Bornemisza family, one of the epicenters of the Bormann Group and the Underground Reich, and that took place in Zagreb Cathedral. Now, what we're going to do in Side 2 is to take a look not only at the Nazi and fascist allegiances of some of the royal houses of Europe, but we're also going to take a look at the House of Liechtenstein, indications that it might have some of those same kinds of sympathies. We're also going to take a look at Liechtenstein's royal family as not only a powerful economic entity, but also perhaps as something of a player on the covert action / NGO scene as well. A full plate, but here we go. Now, we're going to turn first to a book called American Dynasty, subtitled Aristocracy, Fortune, and the Politics of Deceit in the House of Bush. This book was authored by Kevin Phillips. We've used it in many broadcasts in the past. And one of the things we're going to take a look at, and the discussion that follows is in the context of Kevin Phillips noting that a number of dynasties, including the Bush family, which he views as something of an American royal dynasty, have been restored. And in extending that theme, Kevin Phillips talks about the return to power of some of the ruling houses of Europe and their associated aristocracies. By the way, and before we get into this, one should remember that Europe was governed by absolute monarchies for many, many decades, or for many centuries, I should say. And those ruling houses and their associated aristocracies did not go away. They developed a tremendous amount of power, wealth, and influence over the years. And to them, democracy, which is really only an outcropping of the last couple of hundred years or so, is something of a burp, and many of them have been quite vocal about their belief that democracy was simply sort of a passing fad. So when one talks about the royal families of Europe, something we have not spoken about a great deal, it should be recalled that these are not just arcane institutions, but because of their wealth, they have power, and because of their power, they have influence, and they are to be considered very seriously. Now, Kevin Phillips talking about the return to power of some of the European dynasties. A disturbing sidebar to the political culture of these restorations was how many of the would-be monarchs, royal houses, and supporting factions had been on the fascist side during World War II. Italy's House of Savoy was banished in part for backing Mussolini and supporting his 1938 race laws targeting Jews. In Bulgaria, Simeon's House of Saxe-Coburg-Gotha fought through much of the war as an ally of Nazi Germany. The Serbian factions backing the potential Alexander II evoked memories of World War II massacres and ethnic battles still commemorated after 600 years. The Romanian House of Hohenzollern-Sigmaringen, supported by the Iron Guard movement that blended rural Eastern Orthodox religion with folkish nationalism, fought most of World War II on Hitler's side. Unfair as it may be to lump together the houses of Karađorđević, Saxe-Coburg-Gotha, Savoy, and Hohenzollern-Sigmaringen, they suggest the dark side of the global political force that has buoyed dynasty and restoration. Parenthetically, this is the context in which we are taking a look at Prince Hans Adam and the royal family of Liechtenstein. The analogy to the English-speaking nations is obviously limited. This is Kevin Phillips going on here. But the caveats cannot be entirely ignored. And now, we must turn to the different encouragement given to Aristophilia during the 1980s and 1990s by economic forces. Now, in the context of our forthcoming discussion of the Liechtenstein royal family, one of the dynamics that Kevin Phillips points out here is going to be paramount, namely the relationship of this particular royal family, the house of money laundering, we could perhaps call it, to great corporate power. Now, again, not only is Liechtenstein a tax haven, an offshore center, but when one sees the closeness of the royal family of Hans Adam to the Habsburgs, and the Habsburgs marrying into the Thyssen-Bornemises, I think some of the purview of the relationship and how it fits in to the lines of inquiry developed on this broadcast over the years will become clearer to certain members of the listening audience. Skipping down in Kevin Phillips' narrative here and talking about how corporate power has aided the reinstitution of some of these royal houses and related interests. Skipping down, much the same thing happened after the American Civil War, when aging Jeffersonians and Jacksonians steadfastly believed that the egalitarian values of the early 19th century persisted despite the rise of corporations. They had been captivated by the post-1783 elimination of the old British legal structure of entail and primogeniture, which kept states intact under one heir at death. In the 1820s, even the Federalist Noah Webster paid tribute to the revolutionary principles. An equality of property with a necessity of alienation, constantly operating to destroy combinations of powerful families, is the very soul of a republic, unquote. But not until the 1880s, did it become clear that the new power of corporations, with their prolonged legal existences and constitutional rights equivalent to those of individuals, had simply mooted the old rules and provided the framework for the rise of a new aristocracy. The reforms and shibboleths of 100 years earlier had become irrelevant. What we're going to look at now very quickly are a couple of aspects, actually several aspects of the royal family of Liechtenstein. First of all, we're going to return to that interview with Prince Hans Adam II from which we read earlier, and we're going to examine the royal family of Liechtenstein's role in blocking the return to the former Soviet Union of fighting units that had fought on the side of Nazi Germany in World War II. After that, we're going to take a look at claims by the royal family of Liechtenstein that the Czech Republic and all of its citizens pay restorations from properties that were seized shortly after World War II by Czechoslovakia. vis-a-vis the return of Russian or Soviet nationals after World War II, that's something of a mixed bag here, and I don't view the discussion that's about to follow as definitive. There were many former combatants who had been taken prisoner or who had simply fled the cruelty of Stalin. Many of them were returned and summarily liquidated, as was Stalin's style. There also, however, was something that was deliberately abused by, for example, some of the Vatican-related Nazi smuggling interests that we looked at in Kenneth with John Loftus and, for the record, 532. Many of these elements, many of these ex-Soviet fighting elements and allied institutions were, in fact, not only overtly fascist, but had been engaged in tremendous atrocities during World War II. Many of them, for that reason, were valued as intelligence assets. So, in what we're about to examine, I don't view this as definitive, but do note that the people that the royal family of Liechtenstein protected weren't political refugees, but fighting units that had gone over to the German side and fought on the German side in World War II. Once again, and the URL for this interview will be on the website, Ladislav Kahun interviewing Prince Hans Adam. A piece of information that in the end of World War II, several thousand Cossacks fighting on the side of the Germans escaped to Liechtenstein recently appeared in a discussion on the Nividentelny PES server. The Allies then allegedly entered your country and handed them over to the Soviet Union. Did the Allies violate your neutrality at that time? Hans Adam II. The Allies did not violate our neutrality at the end of World War II. The Russian troops fighting on the side of the Germans against the Communists were disarmed when they crossed the border into Liechtenstein. Despite strong pressure from the Soviet Union, Liechtenstein refused to hand over those people against their will and accepted them as refugees according to international law. Those who wanted to return were either executed or sent to the Gulag by the Soviet authorities. As far as I know, Liechtenstein was the only country who refused to hand over Russian troops fighting on the German side to the Soviet authorities against their will. Parenthetically, that's hardly the case. The Vatican occupied much of its immediate post-World War II career with doing exactly that. Also noting another question from Ladislav Kahun. According to the above-mentioned article published by the BBC Czech Service, this means that each Czech citizen would have to pay 2,000... Basically, up to 2,000 Czech kroners, I believe there are, if the claims concerning your financial compensation should be met. World War II took place nearly 60 years ago, and most Czech citizens remember neither the war nor the confiscation based on President Beneš's decrees. So note that the royal family of Liechtenstein and Prince Hans Adam are trying to get the Czech Republic to pay enormous reparations for property seized in the aftermath of World War II. Note also that whatever its significance, and that may be very small or very large, the Royal House of Liechtenstein also protected combatants who had fought on the side of the Nazis in World War II. Whether that is indicative of the sorts of sympathies that Kevin Phillips was talking about on the part of other European ruling families, well, that remains to be determined. A couple of things. Some more about the economic power of the royal family of Liechtenstein. Now, this again should be weighed in the context of what Kevin Phillips was talking about, how many of these aristocratic/royal restorations were effected because of the alliance of those elements with great corporate power. Think about Liechtenstein, its role as a money laundering center, its links to the Alpha Networks. Think about the closeness between the Hans Adam and his family and the Habsburgs, and the fact that Karl von Habsburg is now married into the Thyssen-Bornemisza interests. This, in addition to some of the other things that we have looked at and will look at, suggests at least the possibility, and I believe it's a very distinct one, that Prince Hans Adam and the royal family of Liechtenstein are an element in the constellation of the Underground Reich. We're going to take a look now at the royal family's significant involvement with hedge funds. The following is from the Bloomberg News Service. Liechtenstein's Prince Hans Adam II made his first foray into hedge funds by investing in Long-Term Capital Management, LP. By the way, that firm was at the epicenter of the hedge fund crisis of 1998. Continuing, instead of retreating when LTCM collapsed in 1998, his, that is to say Prince Hans Adam's family firm, LGT Capital Partners, put $2.5 billion more into such funds, including money from outside investors. In all, LGT Capital has swept in $6 billion for investment in buyout firms and hedge funds, unregulated investment pools that bet on falling as well as rising prices. Unlike royals who devote their time to ceremonies and charities, Prince Hans Adam, 60, heads the foundation that owns LGT Group, a parent of LGT Capital. Quote, Prince Hans Adam is unique in running this kind of business, by the way, unique among European royals, says Bob Houston, editor of Royal Monthly Magazine in London. He's the only one who has a proper job, unquote. LGT Capital's hedge fund business, which reduces risk by spreading its money among multiple funds, helped the firm prosper when Hans Adam battled Parliament for more power and police probed allegations of money laundering in the country of $34,000. In the country of 34,000 people, excuse me. Now LGT is pushing to expand. Now note that this hedge fund of the Liechtenstein royal family prospered when Prince Hans Adam basically in 2000-2001 lobbied for the reinstitution of total power. This as there were investigations into the numerous funny money networks in Liechtenstein, including funny money networks that run in the direction of September 11th, such as some of the Alpha Links, and in particular, the royal family of Liechtenstein's connections with companies in the bank Altaqua constellation. Skipping down, more about the House of Liechtenstein's hedge fund. The House of Liechtenstein, which has ruled the country for almost 300 years, formed LGT Capital to manage the family's money and first accepted outside funds in 1996. The firm uses the slogan, quote, investing like the prince, unquote, on its website and offers clients the chance to put their money in the so-called princely portfolio. Quote, they are very credible and quite successful, unquote, says Joe Seat, a partner at Sigma Partnership, a hedge fund consulting firm in London. The firm's ties to the royal family have helped it win clients among wealthy families from Scandinavia to Switzerland and Austria, says Jacob Schmidt, a director at Allen Bridge Group PLC in London, which provides research on fund managers. Quote, the family has access to all the serious money in Central Europe, unquote, Schmidt says. He declined to identify any of LGT's capital clients. Thomas Weber, 43, a partner at LGT Capital, also declined to name any individuals who invest with the firm. So note again the secretive nature of this network, but note that an analyst who declined to mention any of them says the family has access to all the serious money in Central Europe. Well, just imagine we've got the Habsburgs marrying in here with elements of the Thyssen-Bornemisza family, and that is some serious power indeed. Now, we're going to take a look, too, at an institution that was set up at Princeton University through a gift, a fellowship that Prince Hans Adam set up. It's the Liechtenstein Institute on Self-Determination, and it's at Princeton University, set up basically as sort of a little Liechtensteiner principality within the Princeton University complex. And basically, reading between the lines, this particular organization looks very much like one of these NGOs that have been linked to covert operations. Specifically, they're talking about the crisis of self-determinant elements that want to break away from various countries, and they just happen to be areas where there are large Islamist movements on the landmass that I have identified as the Earth Island. The Earth Island, by the way, is a German geopolitical term dating back to the 19th century. It deals with a landmass that embraces all of Europe, most of the Middle East, most of Asia, and the former Soviet Union. It dominates most of the world's landmass, has most of the world's landmass, population, mineral resources, petroleum, and across the middle of it as a stretch of Muslim population. For that reason, German and underground Reich power politics, as well as the power politics of other countries, have long sought to ally with elements of that Muslim population in order to basically gain dominance of the Earth Island. In this context, I think some of the activities of this Liechtenstein Institute on Self-Determination at Princeton should be carefully considered. The following is from the Princeton University educational website. A $12 million gift establishes Institute. It reads in part, a $12 million gift to Princeton from Prince Hans Adam II of Liechtenstein will create the Liechtenstein Institute on Self-Determination, which will serve as a center for research and teaching on issues of self-determination around the world. The gift will expand the university's existing Liechtenstein research program on self-determination, which has also been funded by Prince Hans Adam II. It will enable Princeton faculty, students, and outside experts to expand their work and embark on wide-ranging new projects in places such as Kosovo, Kashmir, and Chechnya, all places where there are Islamist elements associated with the Muslim Brotherhood and Al-Qaeda and Al-Taqwa milieu. Milieu is plural. This basically is what this institution is going to be doing, skipping down. Researchers at the Institute are beginning work on three major projects. An initiative launched in June by Donnersbeck Gruber and Stephen Kotkin, director of the Russian Studies Program, is exploring state power borders and self-governance in the former Soviet Union. The project is expected to conclude with findings and recommendations presented at a major conference in 2001. In the second project, which is also supported by a grant from the Carnegie Corporation of New York, researchers will develop strategies to prevent and manage crises of self-determination. This project brings together Donnersbeck Gruber, Michael Doyle, director of the Center of International Studies, Jeffrey Herbst, chair of the Department of Politics, and Gilbert Roseman, professor of sociology. In the third project, researchers will search for solutions to the problem in Kashmir, where separatist groups have mounted an 11-year struggle against Indian rule. Predominantly Muslim Kashmir has been the main point of conflict between India and Pakistan since the partition of India in 1947. At the same time, the Institute will continue to work to assist in finding a peaceful solution for conflict in the Balkans. So note the preoccupation with areas of Islamist activity on the Earth Island, and note again the previous indications of involvement of the Liechtenstein royal family with the Bank Al-Taqwa constellation and the ASAT Trust. Is this institute at Princeton that has now been set up, does this constitute yet another link between the royal family of Liechtenstein and Islamist elements? And if so, is that in turn linked with possible royal family of Liechtenstein underground Reich connections? That is the question. Recall that Norbert Seeger and his Progressive Citizens Party served as a front for the assumption of total power, the reassumption of total power by Prince Hans Adam and the royal family of Liechtenstein. This in 2000-2001, that's when the push came, when there were these investigations into the funny money networks in Liechtenstein. Article here that's going to introduce a woman that we're going to be looking at. This is a woman named Kohler, and Marie Gabrielle Kohler, a caveat. This is from the Free Republic website. That is an ultra-reactionary website, and although it can be useful because it does reprint articles and texts that are at least in and of themselves untainted and therefore useful to the researcher, one should also note that despite their faithful reproduction of certain articles, they also are an extremely ideologized website, and that the fact that some of the stuff one finds there can be useful should not, emphatically not, be misunderstood as conveying credibility to an awful lot of their arguments. With that caveat, from the intelligence newsletter on the Free Republic website, something that doesn't appear to fit into the normally reactionary context of that website, new accusations against Liechtenstein from June 1st of 2000. For the first time, someone has come forward with details, including the names of companies and go-betweens, that clearly establish how Liechtenstein has become a money-laundering capital. Marie Gabrielle Kohler, who holds double Austrian and Canadian citizenship and worked in a Liechtenstein law firm between 1993 and 1996, has denounced the system from within, as it were. That law firm, by the way, is the law firm of Norbert Seeger. And after discussion here of how Liechtenstein basically is nothing but a money laundering principality, we go to another article from October 12th of 2000, also from the Freeper intelligence newsletter, with the caveat about this site that I cited. Mystery trade in human organs. The Swiss lawyer Marie Gabrielle Kohler, who exposed money laundering practices in Liechtenstein, now claims to have discovered an extensive trade in human organs in Europe. She says the traffic passes by way of Switzerland, Liechtenstein, the United Kingdom, and the British Virgin Islands. The chief prosecutor in Geneva, Bernard Bertosa, has opened an inquiry into her allegations. And skipping down, Ms. Kohler worked in Liechtenstein as a Ms. Kohler worked in Liechtenstein in a prestigious law firm run by Norbert Seeger, who was also president of the principality's Progressive Citizens Party between 1993 and 1996. In January of 1995, Seeger founded an association for science and medical research whose official aim was to supply organs to university laboratories. According to Ms. Kohler, the association, in fact, carried out a number of illicit transactions. Ms. Kohler denounced, Ms. Kohler denounced her boss to the Liechtenstein authorities in 1995. For her pains, however, she was sued for economic espionage by Seeger. In 1996, the German news magazine Focus claimed to have evidence of a network trading in illicit blood and organs and linked Seeger and a Freiburg-based doctor, Michael Hummel, to it. While investigators in the canton of St. Gall in Liechtenstein closed the case in 1997, they acknowledged that the association was, quote, and this is the one headed up by Norbert Seeger, accused by his former employee of Ms. Kohler, of trafficking illegally in organs and blood products. While investigators in the canton of St. Gall and Liechtenstein closed the case in 1997, they acknowledged the association was, quote, dubious, without members or notable activity, unquote. They added that Hummel had been, quote, remunerated for services through hidden payments from foreign commercial partners who must remain secret, unquote. So how is this alleged illicit blood and human organ trafficking outfit allegedly under the auspices of Norbert Seeger's law firm? What exactly is that involved in? Medical experimentation? Illegal genetic experiments? Who knows? Because it certainly could be a brave new world helping to spring from this. Again, Norbert Seeger of Alpha, Alpha linked with the Carl Duisberg Gesellschaft constellation. Norbert Seeger also the head of the Progressive Citizens Party. That was the front to allow the royal family of Liechtenstein to reassume total powers in Liechtenstein, including the power to deflect a legal investigation. This as the authorities were taking a look at the various funny money networks in Liechtenstein, including some that would overlap the milieu of September 11th. A tall order here for one sitting. Please take advantage of the Spitfire website and its various linked websites with both audio and print files, including entire books, to flesh out your understanding, because indeed, it has never been possible to do so to a better degree, a more complete and effective degree than it is now. Spitfire website, www.spitfirelist.com. Don't overlook the many websites linked to that. That concludes Side 2 of For the Record program number 536, Liechtenstein, oh Liechtenstein, being recorded on November 27th of 2005. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.